Welcome back, everyone. We're diving into Judges this time.
Yeah.
Judges, chapters 1 through 3.
Okay.
It's those years right after Joshua. Yeah.
Right after Joshua's death.
Kind of a wild time.
Yeah.
And we've got some great material from Dr. David Howard.
Oh, yeah.
He's done a whole lecture series on Judges. And by the end of this, you'll really get a feel for what the Israelites were up against.
Yeah.
You'll meet some of the key players like Othniel and...
Ehud.
To say he was a resourceful guy.
Yeah, he was. It's a fascinating period. You know, it's not just about battles and conquering, although there's plenty of that.
Right.
But it's really about, you know, like, who are they now? What does it mean to be, or, you know, to be God's people?
Yeah, it's like, okay, they got the land. Now what?
Exactly. What happens when the generation that saw all those miracles, what happens when they're gone?
Yeah, what happens to their kids, right?
Yeah, how do they face these challenges? How do they live in this new land?
Right, with all these different people around. It's like stuff that we still deal with today, you know?
Absolutely.
So one of the first things we bump into is this idea of incomplete conquests.
Okay.
After Joshua dies, there's, you know, no one really steps up to lead.
No clear successor.
Yeah, no clear successor. And Dr. Howard says, like, that's kind of the beginning of the trouble.
Right, that lack of unity.
Yeah. And the tribes, they start doing their own thing. And conquering Canaan, well, doesn't go as smoothly as maybe they thought it would.
Right, it wasn't a clean sweep.
Not at all.
They had successes, but they didn't drive everyone out.
Yeah.
And that has some, you know, big consequences. I mean, think about it. You've escaped slavery. You've wandered in the desert for 40 years.
Right.
You finally get to this land that was promised to your ancestors.
Yeah, you'd want to make sure it was safe, right?
You would think. But they leave these pockets of, like, resistance. It's almost like unfinished business.
Yeah, yeah. It's like they kind of half did the job.
Yeah.
Dr. Howard uses Jerusalem as an example.
Oh, right.
They actually capture it, but then they don't hold on to it.
I don't fully occupy it.
Right. Almost like they planted a flag and then, I don't know, went to get coffee or something. Yep. It's kind of symbolic when you think about it.
It is, especially how Jerusalem becomes, you know, like the city later on. Mm. And this failure to really take control, I mean, it sets a pattern, right?
Right.
And it has these long-term consequences. Those Canaanites who are still there, they become this constant temptation, you know?
Right.
Like, come on, try our gods. They're fun.
Right. Right, like a bad influence.
Uh-huh.
And it's not just the Canaanites they got to worry about. Dr. Howard mentions the Philistines.
Oh, yes. They had a monopoly on iron weapons.
Iron weapons.
Yeah, iron. Big advantage back then. Think about it. Bronze sword versus iron sword.
Oh, yeah.
Iron's stronger. It's more durable. So the Philistines, they had better weapons, better armor. And that explains why the Israelites had trouble in certain areas, like those flat plains. That's where chariots could really dominate.
Right. It's like bringing a knife to a gunfight. No wonder they struggle in those open areas. So you've got these external threats, mm-hmm. by Canaanites, Philistines. But then there's also this internal struggle. A new generation comes along and, well, the text says they did not know the Lord. It's like they've forgotten everything God did for them.
It's a turning point. You know, it's not just forgetting history. It's about forgetting the relationship with God.
Yeah, like the whole point of being Israel.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They were chosen, set apart. They were supposed to be, you know, a light to the nations. But without that memory of God, without that connection, well, they become vulnerable. They start looking for other things to fill that void.
And that's when things start to go downhill.
Yeah.
Cycle.
Yeah,
you know?
Cycle.
Yeah, Dr. Howard talks about it. They sin. They get oppressed by their enemies.
Mm-hmm.
They cry out to God. He raises up a judge to save them. There's peace for a while, and then bam,
mm-hmm.
they forget God again, and the whole thing starts over.
And every time, it seems like it gets worse, you know?
Yeah, like a downward spiral.
Downward spiral, yeah.
So we've got these judges who are trying to get Israel back on track. The first one is Othniel. He's like the model judge.
It's the ideal.
Yeah. He rescues them from Cushan Rishathaim. He was a king from way over in Mesopotamia.
Mm-hmm.
And the text says the spirit of the Lord came upon Othniel. It's interesting, right?
Yeah.
Because we'll see that idea that the spirit empowers leaders again and again in Judges.
It's a foreshadowing, like how the spirit keeps working, you know, in the Bible.
Yeah, yeah. So Othniel, he's like the gold standard, a mm-hmm. faithful servant of God.
Mm-hmm. He sets the bar high.
He does. And then we get to a bit more, shall we say, unconventional judge, Ehud.
Oh, Ehud.
His story is, well, let's just say not for the kids.
Definitely not.
He's left-handed.
From the tribe of Benjamin.
Right, Benjamin. And he goes up against Eglon, the king of Moab. Eglon was how do we say this? A larger gentleman.
A bit on the robust side.
Robust.
Yeah.
And Ehud uses his left-handedness in a very, let's just say, creative way to get the job done.
Creative, yes. You know, it's a story that really shows how desperate things were.
Yeah.
And it makes you think about, you know, how we understand violence in the Bible.
That's a whole other conversation.
It is. It is. But you have to remember, this was a brutal time. Ehud did what he had to do.
He did. It's definitely a story that stays with you. And then we have Shamgar. He's kind of a like a one-hit wonder.
How so?
He just pops up in one verse, kills 600 Philistines with an ox goad.
An ox goose.
Yeah, you know, like a pointy stick for herding oxen.
Wow. Talk about resourceful.
I know, right? Like, how did he even...
Like something out of an action movie.
Exactly. So we have these early judges. Such a mix, you know?
They are a fascinating bunch.
What do you think it tells us about, like, how God works? That he uses all these different kinds of people?
That's a good question. Does he always pick the obvious choice? Or does he sometimes go for, you know, the underdog? The one who maybe doesn't look so impressive on paper.
Yeah, the unexpected hero.
Exactly. It makes you think, doesn't it?
It does. It definitely does.
Yeah.
It really does make you wonder how God picks his leaders right.
It does. And it makes you think about Deborah, too.
Oh, yeah, Deborah.
Yeah, she's in the next couple chapters. It's chapters 4 and 5. And she really breaks the mold.
In what way?
Well, she's, you know, she's a prophetess.
Okay.
And a judge.
Prophetess and a judge.
Mm-hmm. She's an amazing figure.
Yeah. I mean, in that society, women didn't usually have that kind of power, did they?
It was definitely unusual. Dr. Howard points out that there are very few examples of women in that kind of leadership role.
Yeah.
In ancient Israel, or really anywhere in the ancient Near East.
So she's really an exception.
She is. I mean, her story really challenges our assumptions about, you know, gender roles and leadership.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder, how did she get to that position?
Right. Like, how did that even happen?
It's fascinating.
It is. And she doesn't lead alone, right? She's got Barak with her.
Barak, yes. He's a military commander.
Right. And together they're taking on Jabin.
Jabin, the Canaanite king. He's been oppressing Israel for 20 years.
Wow, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time.
It is. And Barak, well, he seems a little hesitant to go into battle without Deborah. You know, he even says to her, if you go with me, I will go. But if you don't go with me, I won't go.
Interesting. Why do you think he was so insistent on having her with him?
Well, some people think he was just being weak, that he didn't have enough confidence. But I think it's more likely that he recognized, you know, her spiritual authority.
Okay.
Like, he understood that if she was there, it meant God was with them.
So it was more about God's blessing than about, like, military strategy.
Right. He's basically saying, I'm not going unless God's going with us.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And Deborah, being Deborah, agrees to go. But she says this interesting thing to Barak. Because of the course you are taking, the honor will not be yours, for the Lord will deliver Sisera into the hands of a woman.
That's a powerful statement.
It is. It's almost like she's predicting what's going to happen.
It's setting the stage. And what happens next is, well, it's pretty dramatic.
So tell us, what happens?
Well, the Israelites, led by Deborah and Barak, they defeat Sisera's army.
Okay.
But Sisera himself, he escapes.
He gets away.
He does. And he ends up in the tent of Jael.
Jael.
Well, who's that?
She's a Kenite woman.
Kenite. Remind me, who are the Kenites?
They were nomads. They had an alliance with Israel going all the way back to Moses' father-in-law.
Oh, right, right. So you'd think Sisera would be safe with them.
You'd think so.
Yeah.
But while Sisera is sleeping, Jael, she takes a tent peg and drives it through his temple.
Whoa, that escalated quickly.
Yeah, it's a brutal scene. And scholars have debated it a lot,
yeah.
You know. Some see her as a heroine. Others, they question whether what she did was right.
It definitely raises some tough questions about violence in the Bible.
It does.
I mean, the text doesn't shy away from the hard stuff, does it?
No, it doesn't. And I think we're supposed to wrestle with these passages. They challenge us to think about our own assumptions about, you know, violence and justice and what role women had back then.
Yeah. It's not always simple, is it?
Not at all. And what's interesting is Deborah's story is also told in a song.
A song?
Yes. In chapter 5, it's called The Song of Deborah. It's considered one of the oldest pieces of Hebrew literature.
Wow.
And it captures the whole drama of the battle so beautifully.
So we've got this amazing song celebrating Deborah's victory.
Right. And one thing that's really striking is it celebrates everyone who was involved. including the women.
So they weren't just, you know, standing on the sidelines.
No, they were right there in the thick of it. Yeah. The Song of Deborah talks about their courage, their insights, their willingness to, you know, to step up when they were needed.
It's a good reminder that women have always played an important role in history, even if we don't always hear their stories.
Absolutely.
So we've got Deborah, this incredible woman who leads Israel to victory. And then we move on to Gideon.
Gideon, yeah. His story is in chapters 6 through 8.
Okay.
And he's, well, he's quite different from Deborah.
In what way?
Well, when we first meet him, he's threshing wheat in a wine press.
Oh, wine press. Why a wine press?
He's hiding from the Midianites. They've been raiding Israel, stealing their crops and livestock for 7 years.
Oh, wow. So Gideon's not exactly the picture of a fearless leader.
Not at first. In fact, when God calls him to deliver Israel from the Midianites, Gideon's like, wait, me? My clan's the weakest in Manasseh, and I'm the least in my family.
He doesn't sound very confident.
He's full of doubts, you know, like, are you sure you've got the right guy? I don't think I can do this.
He sounds kind of like me before this deep dive.
But you see, that's what's interesting. God doesn't choose Gideon because he's already strong or confident.
So God sees something in him that Gideon doesn't see in himself.
Exactly. God often works with those who, you know, who recognize their own weakness.
So the victory belongs to God, not to the person he chooses.
Exactly.
But God does give Gideon some reassurance, right?
He does. He gives him signs and wonders to confirm his calling. Remember the whole fleece episode?
Oh, right. Gideon asks God for a sign and then asks for another one, just to be sure.
He needed that tangible proof before he could fully commit.
I can relate to that. Sometimes I need a little extra nudge from God, too. So Gideon's finally starting to come around to this whole saving Israel idea.
Yes, but then...
And then what?
Well, God tells him to reduce his army from 32,000 men down to just 300.
300. That seems a little risky.
It does, doesn't it? You'd think you'd want as many soldiers as possible. But God's logic is different. He wants everyone to know that this victory is his doing, not Gideon's.
So it's a demonstration of God's power.
Yes. Power made perfect in weakness.
So Gideon and his 300 warriors, they attack the Midianites.
They do. They launch a surprise attack at night, using trumpets, torches, and clay jars.
Oh, clay jars. What were they doing with clay jars?
It was all part of the strategy. They created so much noise and confusion that the Midianites panicked and ended up turning on each other.
Wow. What a story. So Gideon's a hero, right? End of story.
Well, not quite.
What happened?
Gideon uses the spoils of war to create an ephod.
An ephod.
A priestly garment. And it basically becomes an object of idolatry for the Israelites.
Oh, no. So Gideon kind of messes things up.
He does. He starts out so humble, recognizing his own limitations. But after this incredible victory, it seems like success goes to his head a little bit.
Yeah, it's easy to get caught up in the hype, isn't it?
It is. And he ends up leading the people astray.
It's a reminder that even people who are used by God can make mistakes.
Absolutely. We all need to be careful about pride and the subtle ways that idolatry can creep into our lives.
So after Gideon, we have Jephthah, right?
Jephthah, yes. His story is in chapter 11. And it's one of the most, it's one of the most tragic in the whole book.
What makes it so tragic?
Well, Jephthah's a skilled warrior, but he makes this rash vow.
What kind of vow?
He promises God that if he gives him victory over the Ammonites, he'll sacrifice the first thing that comes out of his house to meet him when he returns home. Oh. And the first thing that comes out of his house is his daughter.
Oh, no.
It's heartbreaking. You can only imagine Jephthah's his horror when he realizes what he's done.
Some scholars say that Jephthah misunderstood God, that God would never want him to sacrifice his daughter.
Right. Others say that Jephthah was just a man of his time, bound by the cultural norms of his society. It's hard to say for sure.
It's a tough one. But it definitely makes you think about the vows we make and the consequences of our actions, even when we have good intentions.
It does.
But his daughter, she's incredibly strong in this story, isn't she?
She is. She accepts her fate, you know? She just asks for some time to mourn the fact that she'll never be married or have children.
It's a powerful reminder that even in the midst of tragedy, we can choose how we respond.
Exactly. We can choose courage. We can choose dignity, even when life seems incredibly unfair.
It's hard to hear those stories, you know?
It is. It really makes you think about, you know, choices we make and how even with the best intentions, things can go wrong. But as we wrap up Judges, you know we have to talk about Samson.
Oh, Samson. Yeah, he's the most famous judge, isn't he?
I think so. Chapters 13 to 16.
Okay.
It's quite a story.
It's a roller coaster.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got this superhuman strength,
Right.
but he also makes some really, really bad choices.
He does. It's like he's constantly wrestling with, his calling and his flaws.
Yeah, he's got this divine gift, but he's also, well, he's human.
He is very human, and that tension is it's really at the heart of his story.
Right, like he can tear a lion apart with his bare hands. He takes on a whole army by himself, but then he turns around and does something totally reckless.
It's true. And his relationships with women, I mean, that's a whole other issue.
Yeah, especially for a Nazirite, right?
Especially, like, he's not supposed to be with Philistine women.
But he can't seem to help himself.
He can't resist. And it leads to trouble over and over again.
And then there's Delilah.
Delilah, the classic story, the strong man brought down by a woman.
The Philistines pay her to find out the secret of his strength. And Samson, he's so smitten with her, he just tells her.
He does. And it turns out his strength is in his hair. It's never been cut.
So she cuts it off while he's sleeping.
She does. The Philistines capture him, blind him.
It's brutal.
It is.
You really feel for him, even though he kind of brought it on himself.
Yeah, it's a reminder that even the strongest among us can be vulnerable
To temptation.
to temptation, yeah, and
Yeah.
to, trusting in our own strength instead of God's.
But even after all that, after the blindness and the imprisonment, Samson's story isn't over, is it?
No, it isn't. There's still a glimmer of faith there.
Okay, so what happens?
So they bring him out at this Philistine festival, right, to mock him.
Oh, that's awful.
It is. But in that moment, Samson, he prays to God.
He prayed.
He asks for one last burst of strength.
I don't know what happens.
God answers his prayer. Samson pushes apart the pillars of the
The
temple.
pillars.
Yeah, pillars holding up the whole building, and the whole thing comes crashing down
On
on
everyone.
everyone. Samson, the Philistines, everyone.
Yeah. It's a pretty dramatic end.
It is. But there's a sense of redemption there too, don't you think?
Yeah. He made some bad choices. He suffered. But in the end, he fulfills his purpose, you know?
Yeah.
He delivers Israel from the Philistines.
He does. It's a reminder that God can use anyone, even the most broken people.
Yeah. Even when we mess up, even when we think we're too far gone, God can still use us.
Absolutely. So as we finish up this deep dive into Judges, what are some things you hope, our listeners will take away?
Well, I think it's important to remember that these stories, they're not just like ancient history.
Right.
They're about us too, about our struggles with faith, with doing the right thing, with dealing with the consequences of our actions. These judges, they're inspiring, but they're also real people. They make mistakes, they have doubts.
They do. We can see ourselves in them, can't we?
Absolutely. We all drift away from God sometimes.
We do. We forget how faithful he is, and we try to do things our own way.
But even when we do that, God never gives up on us.
He doesn't. He keeps pursuing us, keeps offering us second
He's
chances.
patient. He's merciful.
He is. And he keeps raising up leaders, even when those leaders are, imperfect.
Like us.
Like us.
Judges, it's a challenging book. There's violence, there's ambiguity, but it's also a book of hope. It shows us that God can use anyone
Anyone.
to do amazing things, and it reminds us to keep trusting in Him,
Even when we don't understand.
even when things are tough. So, thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Judges.
Yes, thank
We
you.
hope you've learned something, you've been challenged, maybe even a little bit inspired.
And we hope you keep exploring these stories, keep digging deeper.
Because they still have so much to teach us today.
They do.